Up is the news.
Headlines: a young Palestinian man succumbs to the wounds that he sustained by Israeli gunfire during an attack in the West Bank city of Jenin. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran has responded to Israel right inside Tel Aviv whenever it has decided to. And Russia says it is now in full control of Ukraine's last stronghold in the eastern region of Luhansk as a series of deadly blasts hit the Russian city on the border. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gitsum Jahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. A young Palestinian man has succumbed to the wounds that he suffered during clashes with Israeli forces. 19-year-old Kamel Abdullah Alwan came from the northern occupied west city of Jenin. He was shot in the abdomen and right hand after Israeli forces raided the Flashpoint city on Saturday. Kamel was named after his brother, who was also killed by Israeli forces in 2003. At least 77 Palestinians, including 15 children, have been killed by regime forces this year, 28 of them in Jenin. Israeli forces regularly carry out raids to allegedly make arrests in the populated Palestinian communities, particularly in Jenin. They have also grown violent and more frequent since the number of deadly anti-Israeli operations in recent months have increased. Syria's president has hailed Iran as a part of the solution to problems in the region as he meets Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian in Damascus. Bashar al-Assad said collective regional efforts are needed to resolve problems in the region, noting that Damascus would welcome any solution that would keep Syria away from war. The Iranian minister, for his part, condemned Israeli violations, Syria's territorial integrity. He said that the silence of Western countries, which claim to advocate human rights, exposes double standards. Regarding Turkey's plan to launch a military operation inside Syria, Amir Abdullahian said Iran understands Turkey's security concerns but opposes any form of military action in the Arab country.
Today, I conveyed this message to high-ranking Syrian officials that Iran is ready to use its good offices to prevent a military confrontation and direct focus on a political solution.
The top Iranian diplomat said Tehran believes foreign intervention in Syria in any form will complicate the situation and further destabilize the region. Amir Abdullahian traveled to Damascus on Saturday, calling the trip a mission to ease tensions between Syria and Turkey. This days after Ankara threatened to launch a new offensive against Kurdish fighters in northern Syria. Amir Abdullahian's trip to Syria comes several days after he visited Turkey. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent Muhammad Ali, live from Damascus, and Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist, who's joining us live from Toronto. Let's begin with our correspondent Muhammad Ali. Now, this has happened so often, and now we're hearing that Turkey is officially discussing undermining the territorial integrity of a sovereign country, Syria. Where does this stem from?
Yes, exactly. This is not the first time that Turkey threatens to carry out a military operation in Syria. It threatened before, and it carried out military operations inside Syria. This is definitely against international law and the sovereignty of Syria. Syria, of course, rejects that, and this is where we can find the importance of the visit of Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian to Syria, because at the moment he arrived in Damascus International Airport, he said that Iran is exerting efforts to solve the misunderstanding between Turkey and Syria through dialogue. And perhaps this was the main topic for the main headline of this visit of Mr. Amir Abdullahian to Syria. He discussed with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad his meetings. He said in a, that Turkey's concerns over border issues between Syria and Turkey, but he is against, of course, Iran is against any military operations here because this would further complicate the issue. He said that he finds that the only solution for such a misunderstanding and conflict, perhaps between both countries, lies through dialogue between security officials of both countries. Now, Iran will be playing, according to many allies, a very important role in this matter, since that it has good relations, perhaps, with Turkey, and Syria is a main ally. Mr. Abdullahian said that he supports the unity of Syria and against any military operation inside the country. Iran has been, since day one of the crisis, against any foreign intervention in Syria, always tries to help Syria solve the unrest in general through dialogue. But Iran's role in solving this dispute is very important between Turkey and Syria because, as you know, Turkey plays a very basic role in the its borders for thousands of terrorists to enter, and it gives support, according to Syrian government officials, to terrorist groups in the northern part of Syria, and it literally occupies Syria, according to all the state Syrian officials. And I believe, and according to many allies here in Syria, this was a very important visit for Mr. Abdullahian in this matter.
So, Mr. Wahlberg, we heard what our correspondent just said. How legitimate do you see Turkey's response to what it calls terrorist attacks from Syrian soil, and does it even have the right to take this as a pretext in order to invade Syria?
Well, it's a very complex situation. I don't want to condemn Turkey for its concerns. It has concerns about Kurdish terrorism in its own within its own borders, and it's concerned about the cross-border Kurds. But it's the only answer is negotiating and working with Assad, and it's taken 10 years now that Turkey has played a very negative role trying to undermine Assad, and now has grudgingly accepted Assad and the current Turkish Syrian government as the basis for negotiations. But it's still not a done deal. Assad has actually been working well with Kurds, his own Kurds. They really are looking for stability, and they will accept Assad, whereas before they were more rebellious. So I think that with Russia and Iran playing a supportive role, that this should bring Turkey to its senses. It's interesting, it's backed off its threats to invade. For several weeks now it's been threatening, but it hasn't done it. So I think that's an indication that it's trying to sensible way with Iran and Russia. And of course, Israel's there in the background. Just yesterday, it bombed the coast, Tartus, and you know, with no real goal, no obvious objective, just more of Israel playing its destabilizing role. And it's a bit worrisome that Turkey is now working more with Israel on various, there's the energy issue and the gas, and there are so many issues now at play in the world. That it's a very complex scenario, and let's just hope that forces of reason and restraint will play a role at this point.
Muhammad Ali, don't you think that this could somehow be a distraction for the Turkish people itself in this country, where they're dealing with very high inflation rates at the moment? Could that be Erdogan's tactic in order to deviate attention from the internal issues that Turkey is facing?
Yes, definitely. This, we know that policy adopted by the Turkish government towards Syria is different from perhaps the opinion and what the people, the Turkish people, want. They want security, they want better economic conditions, and this won't happen in light of such policy adopted because Syria and Turkey share a very long border, I believe more than 800 kilometers, and the Turkish people want to live in peace and war. Eventually, what is important to point out too is that the international community did nothing with regards to such attacks by Turkey against Syria. There has been several military operations there. Civilians were killed. That the Turkish side supporting terrorism inside Syria for its own interests, not for the interests of the Syrian people. There's also an issue that analysts speak about, which is that if Turkey really wants security and peace on the border with Syria, if it wants Syrian refugees to go back to their home country, why is it supporting terrorist groups in Syria? Why is it carrying out military operations? It can actually collaborate with the Syrian side in order to get those refugees back. And also, what is very important to point out too is that the Syrian government responsible for the security of the border on the Syrian side of that border. It's not the Turkish side, and this is according to international law. So there are many question marks on the behavior of the Turkish government, and what are the goals behind such military operations and intervention inside Syria. Now, what is very optimistic is what Mr. Hussein Amir Abdullahian, the foreign minister of Iran, said just yesterday here from Damascus. He said that he is optimistic about solving this dispute. And coming from Turkey into Syria, towards Syria before, he said that during his talks with the Turkish officials, he felt that and he understood that the Turkish side now currently is prioritizing currently the political solution, a political kind of solution for such a misunderstanding between both countries. This is why we have to point out that it's a very important role that Iran could be playing now to solve this issue.
Okay, so Mr. Wahlberg, how much of it do you think is, according to one of the comments that I just read, due to Turkey's quote-unquote imperialist impulses?
Well, it is a bit concerning to see how Erdogan is really being very aggressive in his stance on many issues. He's threatening NATO, that you've got to repatriate 33 who he claims are terrorists. Who knows how really terrorists they are. Whether Finland and Norway will comply is another issue. So he's very aggressive there. He's moving now with Israel. He's moving, he's confronting Russia and Syria. He's really flexing his muscles. So and there is a kind of a neo-Ottoman element there, that reviving the old powerful Turkish quote-unquote empire, though it was not really an empire in the sense of the British or what the Americans do. So it's not really an empire, but it has that gloss of strength and, you know, the he wants to play the controlling factor in the Middle East, and he and Israel are really vying for that position. So whatever can help him do that, he will support. So if he decides that Syria will now be his ally, then he'll mend the fences and build bridges. But he's not really at that position yet. So what's really important is that Iran and Russia, although Iran really is the stalwart, reliable partner. So Iran really does play an essential role at this point, just to keep things stable enough for the elements to fall into place for Turkey to work with Syria and stop the aggression. But we're not there yet. So Iran does play an essential role at this point.
Okay, that was Mr. Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist out of Toronto, and our very own Muhammad Ali, live from Damascus. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. Moving on the sidelines of his visit to Damascus, Iran's Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian also sat down with the leaders of Palestinian groups in Syria. In that meeting, Hossein Amir Abdullahian emphasized Iran's capability to respond to the Israeli regimes inside Tel Aviv.
We have responded to the Zionist regime right inside Tel Aviv whenever we have wanted to.
Amir Abdullahian said Tel Aviv's allegations that Tehran is seeking to target Israeli tourists in Turkey is nothing but a fabricated scenario. He also said that Palestine remains the most pressing issue for the Muslim world. The minister reiterated Tehran's unflinching support for Palestinians until the liberation of their homeland and the establishment of the State of Palestine with Al-Quds as its capital. He regretted that certain regional countries are turning a blind eye to the issue of Palestine and getting closer with Israel to cover up their domestic problems. He said that is a betrayal of the cause of Palestine. Intense fighting is raging in eastern Ukraine, with Russia saying its forces are now in full control of Lysychansk. The city is Ukraine's last remaining stronghold in the Lugansk region. A short while earlier, Russian Defense Ministry reported that its forces were fighting Ukrainian troops inside the city after capturing the surrounding villages. With Lysychansk in their hands, Russian troops will be able to move further in Donbass. Just last week, they captured Severodonetsk, another major city in the east. In the meantime, Russia's border city of Belgorod, three people have been killed and several others wounded in several blasts. So far, no reactions from Kiev. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Republicans appear poised to take a congressional district that the party has not held in more than 30 years, as an opinion poll shows the GOP candidate leading six potential Democratic competitors. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Derek Roche. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled, Republicans Set to Flip Deep Blue Seat Held by Democrats for Over 30 Years. Republicans appear poised to take a congressional district that the party has not held in more than 30 years, as an opinion poll shows the GOP candidate leading six potential Democratic competitors. A Suffolk University Boston Globe opinion poll shows Republican Alan Fung ahead of the six Democrats who are seeking their party's nomination in Rhode Island's second congressional district. The second district has been represented by a Democrat in the House of Representatives since 1991. And, if the opinion poll is accurate, it could indicate trouble for Democrats far beyond Rhode Island. If Republicans can flip a seat that has been blue for three decades, President Joe Biden's party could be facing major losses in the midterm elections as he continues to struggle with a low approval rating. Alan Fung, a former mayor of Cranston and two-time gubernatorial nominee, led five of the six Democratic candidates by around 10 percentage points, but this lead was narrower with Seth Magaziner, who is considered the Democratic front-runner. Alan Fung led Seth Magaziner by 45% to 39% in the Suffolk University poll, a margin of just 6 percentage points. A further 17% of voters were undecided between Magaziner and Fung in what could be a crucial finding. Magaziner is currently Rhode Island General Treasurer and was a candidate for the 2022 gubernatorial nomination before withdrawing from that race. The opinion poll was conducted from 19th to 22nd of June among 432 likely midterm election voters in Rhode Island's 2nd Congressional District and had a margin of error of plus or minus 4.8%. Democrats have held the seat for the Rhode Island 2nd Congressional District since 1991, and the incumbent, Representative Jim Langevin, has represented the district since 2001. He's retiring at the end of this term, and he's not seeking re-election. The last Republican to win election in the 2nd Congressional District was former Representative Claudine Schneider, who served in Congress from 1981 to 1991. But declined to seek re-election in 1990 and mounted an ultimately unsuccessful U.S. Senate bid. The Suffolk University Boston Globe opinion poll found that among 172 likely Democratic primary voters in the 2nd District, Magaziner enjoyed 30.2% support, far surpassing the other candidates who failed to score 10% each. However, 43% of respondents were undecided. Alan Fung enjoyed a substantial lead among the 102 likely Republican primary voters surveyed, with 66.67% backing him against rival candidate Robert Lancia, who had 14.7% support, while 13.7% were undecided. The primaries are not due to take place until 13th of September. The possibility of a Republican in Rhode Island winning a congressional seat could have national implications in similar districts, said Davy Paleologos, director of the Suffolk University Political Research Center, in a statement issued with the opinion poll on Monday. Democrats may have cause for concern after Republican Myra Flores flipped a congressional seat in Texas's 34th district in a special election. The district was historically Democratic. Republicans are hoping to retake the House in November, which would effectively allow them to stymie President Joe Biden's agenda. President Biden's involvement could actually hinder the eventual Democratic nominee, who must thread the needle of connecting with undecided voters who believe the Rhode Island economy is awful, while supporting President Biden's agenda, which is seen as detrimental to that very economy, Paleologos said. The opinion poll found that 82% of respondents said the economic situation in Rhode Island was either fair or poor, and just 16% rated it as good or excellent. The country continues to suffer rising prices, and the annualized rate of inflation was 8.6% in May, while gasoline prices have reached new record highs in recent weeks.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya man bada'a khalqi wa dhikri wa tarbiyati wa birri wa taghdiyati habni libtida'i karamak wa salif birrik bi ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi أتراك معذبي بنارك بعد توحيدك وبعد من طوى علي قلبي من معرفتك ولهج به لساني من ذكرك واعتقده ضميري من حبك وبعد صدق اعترافي ودعائي خاضعا لربوبيتك.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. يا إلهي وسيدي وربي أتراك معذبي بنارك بعد توحيدك. My master, my lord, can you be seen tormenting me with your fire after I have professed to your oneness? وبعد من طوى عليه قلبي من معرفتك, after recognition my heart has embraced, ولهج به لساني من ذكرك, and the remembrance of you my tongue has constantly mentioned, واعتقده ضميري من حبك, after the love of you to which my mind has clung, وبعد صدق اعترافي ودعائي خاضعا لربوبيتك, after the sincerity of my confession and my supplication, the humble before your lordship. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that, O Allah, all your pious servants know you as the one who will have mercy on us in the hereafter. All the pious servants know that you will forgive our sins, you will place us in paradise, and you will gather us together with your lovers on the day of resurrection. In this excerpt, dear listeners, we have discussed so many different concepts. The last of which that we started talking about is the concept of dhikr and remembrance. As Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَلَهِجَ بِهِ لِسَانِي مِنْ ذِكْرِكَ, after the remembrance of you, my tongue has constantly mentioned. This continuation of the prayer, specifically in adversity and ease, is very important key and factor in bringing forth Almighty Allah's mercy. In this regard, Imam Sadr alayhi salam has said, "My grandfather used to say, take precedence in making supplication, because if a servant consistently invokes Allah and then an affliction befalls him and he prays to Allah, it would be said, this is a voice known to us. But if the servant is not consistent in supplicating and a calamity befalls him, it would be said, where were you before this day?" There is a very subtle and a profound meaning lying behind this fact that the remembrance of Allah, specifically in adversity, brings the supplication closer to His acceptance and answer, that we will, God willing, mention after a short break.
Oh my God, my Master, my Lord, and my Nourisher, will you see me punished with the fire kindled by you, despite my belief in your unity, and despite the fact that my heart has been filled with knowledge of you, and when my tongue has repeatedly praised you, and my conscience has acknowledged your love, and despite my sincere confessions and my humble begging submissively made to your divinity? No, indeed you are far too kind and generous to destroy one you nourished and supported, or to drive away from yourself one you have kept under your protection.
Thank you, Allah,
that we hear,
feeling so good
about all the things that we went through,
knowing that God
speaks with us too.
It's not a dream,
this is so true,
and we know
we'll be here forever.
The feeling is indescribable,
knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
These narrations that talk about taking precedence in making supplication, specifically in adversity and ease, are pointing to a subtle and profound meaning. Because if supplication is turning toward Allah, and the most effective and closer of it to acceptance is the one in which the iqbal is at its climax, then the state of turning toward Allah is only actualized when the heart becomes pure and the supplicant turns to Allah wholly, when there would be no obstacle between the prayer and the response. And on the contrary, if the state of turning to Allah is poor, the similar would be the response. I mean, the state of turning toward Allah, drawing the attention of the heart to Him, can only be acquired through frequent supplication, through frequent remembrance and dhikr of Him. That is why the commander of the believer says, وَلَهِجَ بِهِ لِسَانِي مِنْ ذِكْرِكَ, after the remembrance of you, my tongue has constantly mentioned. This is exactly like any other act in human life. The more frequent one's invocation, the more easily he would be to attain the state of iqbal, and his heart would yield to him more in being attentive to Allah. And this is logical. Consequently, when a calamity befalls such a servant, he turns to Allah at that time, his heart would easily and swiftly obey Him in turning toward Allah, as his prayer would be nearer to acceptance, and there would be no hindrance between his supplication and the response from Allah. And this is a secret that we need to take into our consideration if we want our supplications to be accepted and answered. Fadl bin Abbas says that the Holy Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said to me, "Be mindful of Allah. He will be mindful of you. Be mindful of Allah, and you will always find Him before you. Make yourself known to Him in ease, and he will know you in adversity. Also, Imam Ali bin Hussein alayhi salam used to say, I have not seen the like of taking precedence in making supplication, because the response and ijabah is not within the reach of a person at all times. Now let us end our discussion in this episode with a narration from Abu Ja'far Imam Baqir alayhi salam, who used to say, the prayer of a believer in ease ought to be like his prayer at times of adversity. He should not slack off if he is granted his request. So do not get weary of making supplication, because indeed, supplication has a great position with Allah, the Almighty, the Majestic. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Orthman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed breathe, and it cures. Plants also bleed, breathe, and it cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail, deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge. Staff at the National Zoo of Cuba in the capital city of Havana are celebrating a new arrival of a rare baby white rhinoceros. The little calf, named Al, quickly became popular among other animals in the park after he was born. He is part of a conservation program that will add to a gene bank for future breeding. Al is the second white rhinoceros to be born in captivity in 18 years. The park is home to 8 white rhinos and 4 black ones. Zoo staff say the park has one of the largest exhibits of this mammal among zoos in Latin America. White rhinos are endangered species, and their population has dwindled due to illegal poaching and environmental destruction.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Persian fallow deer is a unique but endangered species known for its sleek and spotted body. In this report, our correspondent Youssef Jalali takes us on a quick tour around one of the world's few protected shelters of Persian fallow deer in Iran's city of Sari.
We had to keep quiet and avoid making any sounds to film them, as they are shy and swift, and the slightest sound could send them sprinting and jumping away. Over 60 Persian fallow deer roam in Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Iran's northern city of Sari. The endangered species is carefully protected here to be safe from predators and poachers.
The Persian fallow deer is native to Iran's Khuzestan province, but due to loss of habitat and threats posed to them by predators such as jackals and wild cats, they are endangered and need to be protected in semi-natural refuges like this one.
Persian fallow deer are mainly indigenous to open woodland areas spanning from East Mediterranean coasts to West and Southwest Iran. By 1875, they had gone extinct in all of their main habitats, except in Southwest Iran. After a captive breeding program, the population has rebounded from only a handful of deer in the 1960s to over 200 individuals in Iran.
Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge is a 55 hectares wide. It was introduced in 1962 as a shelter for the Persian fallow deer when the species was on the brink of extinction. At that time, 5 deer were captured and translocated to this refuge. Over the past 6 decades, their number have been multiplied through captive breeding.
The Persian fallow deer is a rare ruminant mammal belonging to the family Cervidae. They're physically larger than other fallow deer, and their antlers are bigger and less palmate. Their special beauty has turned this sanctuary into a hot tourist attraction in Iran's north.
This sanctuary is a tourist destination for visitors who would like to see the Hyrkanian forests in Iran's north and at the same time enjoy the wildlife and learn about efforts made to save the Persian fallow deer from extinction.
In 2015, the Persian fallow deer was registered in the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. Dashtinaz authorities hope through continued captive breeding, the population of these special creatures will soon reach the desired number
and hopefully they will be reintroduced to their natural habitat in southwest Iran.
While they live far from their original habitat, these alluring creatures feel at home here, where they will be safe from the dangers lurking outside, which may lead to their extinction. So here, Persian fallow deer continue to embellish the nature and charm visitors with their beauty. Yusuf Jalali from Dashanaz Wildlife Refuge in Sari.
Catching fish makes you forget even the most complex problems, but think the moment you catch the strangest one. Well, a Cambodian fisherman has caught what researchers say is the world's biggest freshwater fish ever recorded. The giant fish, which weighs around 300 kilograms and 4 meters long, was caught last week from the Mekong River. The female stingray was released back into water after being electronically tagged to allow scientists to monitor her movement and behavior. The fish was named Barami, meaning full moon in the Khmer language. An American fish biologist, Dana Lee, says the data collected from Barami can help protect the species and its habitat.
We got a call this morning at breakfast that they had caught a giant stingray here at Coprea. So we dropped everything. People came up from Phnom Penh, and we're here now just at sunset, just tagged the giant, 330-kilogram giant stingray here in the Mekong River, and released it here right at sunset.
The stingray dethrones the former record holder, a 290-kilogram catfish found in northern Thailand in 2005. More than 1,000 species live in the Mekong River. The famous waterway originates in China and twists south through parts of Thailand, Laos, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Vietnam. Scientists have warned that plastic waste and dam threaten wildlife even in the deepest stretches of the Mekong. Geologists are rejoicing over a new discovery. A 290 million old fossil forest has accidentally been found in southern Brazil. A team of geologists had been sent to the state of Paraná to investigate the rocks there. To their surprise, they were able to find over 160 logs of lycophytes, an extinct variety of the vascular plant subgroup. It's quite rare occurrence that a large number of fossils of the plant were found preserved in upright position for such a long time. The forest itself was discovered in 2018 when a street was being constructed over there. So far, only two other similar collections have been found in smaller forest areas of Brazil and Argentina.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.